Welcome to the Real Education Podcast. I'm your host, Blake Bowles, and on this show, I interview remarkable people who think way outside the box in education. To listen to more episodes, learn more about my guests, or become a patron of this ad and sponsor-free show, visit blakebowles.com/podcast. You can also email me at yourstruly@blakebowles.com. Now, on to the show. My guest today is Ivo Dagan, co-founder of Nomad Spain, an informal education program for young people who want to make a positive difference in the world. Ivo, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
First of all, tell us, what does the word nomad mean? K-N-O-W-M-A-D.
It's a term coined by a US-American researcher, actually, John Moravec. The idea is it's a nomadic knowledge worker. So as we know, workers are more able to move around the world freely nowadays because we can do a lot of our work digitally. I mean, Blake knows that well. So basically the idea is that these workers are people who don't identify so much anymore with one company maybe or with one place where they work. They are nomadic, so they work in a project for a while. As long as they are learning and as long as they are bringing value, they stay there. And once they are done, either not learning anymore or not bringing anything anymore, they move on to the next project. So they are nomadic knowledge workers.
And you are starting a program called Nomads Spain, and this is based upon a program in the Netherlands called Nomads. And can you tell us a little bit about what Nomads was all about, where it began, what its roots are?
Mm-hmm. The Nomad School, where I graduated, where I come from, and that I'm starting, does not actually come from the same roots as John Moravec's term. So the history goes back a bit further. Comes from a school called Chaos Pilots in Denmark, in Aarhus. Which exists for, I think, somewhere around 20, 30 years, and has been founded to educate leaders who can make a difference in the world. People who are able to or really effectively change stuff. And has been kind of has been an inspiration for many other educations. At some point, there were some people in the Netherlands who found out about Chaos Pilots and wanted to bring it to the Netherlands. So they founded Chaos Pilots Rotterdam, which existed for 2 years. And at some point, there were some misunderstandings, and the school in Rotterdam they needed to close, or they decided to close. So as Chaos Pilots is a 3-year program, at the moment where they closed, they had two teams of students. One that had already gone through 2 years of the program, one that had just recently started, and a bunch of people that worked there who were extremely inspired by the work that they were doing. I mean, they were educators who finally found an education that brings the best out of people, and they had to close their school. So some of the students went to Denmark to finish their studies, some went about their own stuff. And a year later, after they closed, they sat together and they were thinking, okay, what do we do now? Because we do want to create an education here in the Netherlands that really enables people to do the best that they can for the world and for themselves. But we don't have the school anymore. They sat together and they realized that they wanted to change some of the stuff that they found in Chaos Pilots. One was that this program of 3 years is too long. They wanted a program that's shorter in a world that moves faster. So they decided to create a 1-year program, and they decided to create a program that was more flexible. So Chaos Pilots had something of a curriculum. You could take some courses, or there was a plan when you could take which courses. And they decided that in case there's a student who wants to start his business in the first week, it has to be possible that this student takes a course in how to start a business in the first week if he needs it. or if people need workshops in group dynamics, they need to be able to ask for them whenever they are needed. So they decided to start a one-year program without a curriculum, basically without a program. And that's where Nomad started.
A one-year program without a curriculum.
Exactly.
And when you described Chaos Pilots, you were speaking in terms of leadership, and later you talked about starting a business. Harvard Business School in the United States has, you know, has a lot of fame for helping people become leaders and start businesses. How did Chaos Pilots, how was it different from something like a traditional business school, like a Harvard Business School? Do they have a different conception of leadership?
Yeah, I would say so. I've never been to Chaos Pilots, and I don't know the program enough. So I'm afraid if somebody who is a Chaos Pilot listens to this, they might say I'm wrong.
Well, let's just talk about Nomads then. Does Nomads conceive of like business leadership or entrepreneurship? You think in a different way than a traditional business school?
Yeah, we do call ourselves a business school, and there's a lot of discussion about it. Just recently, I had somebody asking me, like, why do you need to call this a business school? And the discussion has not come to an end yet after 5 years that Nomad exists. So, yes, there's definitely a different conception of what leadership is and what business is. And also there's a idea of exploration. So instead of a business school might teach you, this is how you do business, this is how it is correct. You follow these models, you learn these ways of doing it, you learn these management techniques, and that's how you make a business plan. And before you start a business, you write your business plan, you make your financial planning for 5 years, and that's how you do it. While Nomads tells you, well, you want to do something, go for it. You don't know how to do it, well, learn it. And if you have a question, let me know and I can help you. So Nomads won't teach you anything until you ask for it. So
Interesting. It's a very learning by doing model, but it also represents, it's similar to an organization called the Sudbury Valley School here, which is a K-12 free school, where the principal for the staff at the school is, we don't help any kids do anything until they come up and they ask for it and they really want it. And otherwise, we just let them be free. We provide resources. We provide, you know, logistical support as needed. But otherwise, they're pretty much doing their own thing. They're designing their own curriculum. And we're here only if they really want our intervention. Does that sound like the Nomads model?
Exactly. If people know primary education better than the kind of education that Nomads is, then I usually explain Nomads as a Sudbury Valley or a democratic school for adults.
I love it. It's the free school, the business school, free school, it's democratic too. So, so we'll get into what Nomads is and what actually happens there. In more depth, but first I want to know, why are you creating a new Nomads, one in Sevilla, Spain?
Because when I got to know Nomad through a coincidence, a friend of mine asked me if I wanted to join her for a weekend trip to Amsterdam, and I said, yes, sure. I mean, I had nothing to do, and she was going to take me to a trip to Amsterdam. So, and on the way, she told me that one of the reasons why she was going was because she wanted to check out this business school. And she told me that probably I wouldn't want to come because I wasn't interested in studying business, but it looked kind of different and I might want to go. So finally I decided to join. And I walked in and there was something in this energy, something in these people there that was like, wow. I walked in without any interest, and the moment that I started talking with someone, I was like, whoa, something is happening here that's different. And what I figured out is that this is the kind of people that I want our world to be full of, like people that are alive, people that are happy, people that are looking for their happiness and that they're actively looking for their happiness. They're not waiting for someone to make them happy. People that want to make a positive difference in the world, they go and look for something they can bring. And so that's what I saw in the first moment, and I got more of that throughout the whole year that I was there. And after I finished, I was like, okay, so what do I do now? And I asked myself, what's the best thing I've seen so far? What do I want to create more of? I was like, obviously Nomads. That's the best thing I've ever seen anywhere. So I want to create more of it. And I'm not Spanish, but I lived in Spain, in the south of Spain. And for those that don't know, Spain is in a place of really bad crisis, economical and social crisis. And so what I was curious is, Nomads is about making a difference. And so I was curious, what difference can Nomads bring in a place that is in crisis, that is in difficulty?
So Spain was your destination because it just was the right time in history, you think, to try this Nomads experiment out?
I think so. Additional to me really wanting to be there. I want to live in Spain.
You love the sun, I assume.
I love the sun, I love the people, I love the language, I love the culture.
And take us back a little bit further. Where did your education begin? And tell us where you're from and how old you are. Give us some context.
I'm 23 now. To say where I'm from is a bit complicated. My mother's Austrian, my father's Israeli. I grew up in Germany. I went to school in Germany. I went to a normal, you could say, traditional education, private Christian high school. Pretty difficult time for me. I was usually identified as the rebel in my class, and for me, it was really difficult to finish this time in high school. The idea of a teacher deciding for me when I could go where and what I could say, when I could say something, how I could say something to them, and most of all, the idea of them, for me, abusing their authority. So I was told a lot that I was supposed to show respect towards my teachers. And what confused me so much was that I didn't receive much respect from my teachers. So I was told in a very unrespectful way that I was supposed to show respect, and that confused me. I was brought up in a family where kind of mutual respect was something very normal, and that there were no different rules for adults than for kids. Actually, I was brought up in a family where there was basically no rules, except like if somebody wanted something from me or from my brother and sister, then they would ask, you know, they would explain us what they wanted us to do and why they wanted us to do that. There were no rules as in, I am an adult, I tell you, you have to do this. So going to school was first of all very confusing, then very disappointing, and at some point it was a bit like, and that sounds a bit exaggerated, but a bit like psychological torture, because I couldn't get up when I want to get up. I couldn't say what I really wanted to say. I couldn't defend myself when I wanted to. And for many years, I spent time kind of fighting my teachers and my teachers fighting me. Like I had quite some teachers who actively and having expressed it to me as well, tried to get me, like kick me out of the school. So that was education as I knew it, that was schooling as I knew it. And so I was pretty upset about that. And I left this and knew I did not want to go back into education. So I also was very, very hesitant to go into university because I expected this to go on, people knowing what was right for me and what was wrong for me. I took a year off. After high school, I got my diploma from high school, and 3 days later I was on a plane to Israel. Was there for a while. I was in Egypt. I was in Turkey. I was in Spain. I was in South America, and then a year later, there was the point of like, so kind of, you know, you can take a year off for traveling. That's something of a normal thing for a German young person. But then at some point you have to get into university like everyone else. And I was lucky enough to, just a week before I would have had to apply, I found Nomads.
And oh, wow.
having seen that school, it was like I'm not going anywhere else. And then this.
And you signed up on the spot for Nomads Amsterdam?
I did, yeah.
And can you share maybe a story or two to tell us what being a Nomads student was like? Mm-hmm. Maybe something that really stands out in your memory as representative of this experience?
Well, there's many, and it's really difficult to find one that would represent it, because there's so many different moments, and like the experience is very diverse. So I try two experiences that are, yeah. So the like a couple of days after I started my year at Nomads, at Nomads the idea is that people learn doing. Instead of like, there's no textbook examples. Like one of the ideas would be that we have enough problems in the world already. We don't need to invent them. So instead of taking problems or situations to solve from textbook, somebody from outside would come in and bring in their situation. So a couple of days after we started, we had an assignment brought in from a big networking event in Amsterdam called Picnic. And the guy who coordinates Picnic came in, explained the event, and he said he didn't want Picnic to be like any other networking event. So basically he asked us to participate and bring in some different stuff. And we looked at him like, okay, so what do you want from us? And he said, well, basically anything. Do something that confuses people, that makes people talk about how weird this was. Do anything to disrupt the normalness of the event, which in itself was a fun assignment. And so we started thinking and brainstorming with him what we could do. At some point he said, look, guys, this is Amsterdam. Naked is an option. because he found that our ideas were a bit too tame. A bit too normal, so that's the kind of people that are in the network of Nomads. We do a really high class networking event, but we bring in completely disruptive. Like he would have accepted us running around naked on the event just to disrupt the whole thing, which in Amsterdam, by the way, is not as weird as it is in the US, I guess.
What did you create for Picnic?
I wasn't there. I finally didn't participate in the actual event. I remember people walking around in animal costumes. I remember people being not allowed to buy an espresso for themselves, only for someone else. So people would have to stand in line together, basically, to get a coffee. I don't remember the whole thing, but there was all kinds of fun interventions there.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like the kind of case study you would learn about at Harvard Business School.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So that's an example of how Nomads is a bit different than a normal business school. And another situation. At Nomads, you spend a lot of time in a group. We call it a tribe. So your class, you start your year in a group, and we call that a tribe. We call that a tribe because there's a lot of the personal development that happens in the year is being held by the tribe. So the people that you spend your year with, they're very close to you. They know you very well, and they can reflect you very well.
How many people are there in a tribe, roughly?
Depends a lot. We had everything between 2 and 20. Now there's the first group of 20. The second tribe was 2. Usually it's somewhere between, I would say, 8 and 13. But it really depends every half a year. In my year, we were 15. So as you can imagine, if you're 15 people and you spend 1 year together, you spend a lot of time together, you work together, you learn together, there's a lot of conflicts. And also the personalities, the characters that are in Nomads are very it's a wide range. So at some point we had a bit of a tough time, and we were all a bit distant from each other. And one of the founders of Nomads, Sila, came, and we had a session with her. She works a lot with groups and with personal development. And it was one of us that didn't want to join because we had this fight in the group. And so she went out and asked him to join. And he came in reluctantly and he sat down, and she asked him to say why he wouldn't be there. And he said he's afraid that if he now started to talk, he would be judged by us because we were already in this tricky situation. And so Sila asked him, look, do you want to know if people want you to be here? And he thought about it for a while because he was kind of feeling attacked, and he said, yes, I actually really want to know why people would want me to be here. And so what Sila did was she made a round, she had us go around in the circle. Each one of us share why we love this person, why we loved him so much, and why we loved that he was a part of our tribe. And imagine there are 14 people that know you almost better than your family, sharing why they love you so much in a situation where you believe you have a fight. And so that was about 45 minutes, and all of us were crying at the end of it. And then Sila said, okay, so now let's do this for each one of us. So after finishing that one that was really intense, we spent another 8 hours only talking about why we love the one person whose turn it was at that moment.
8 hours?
So 8 hours in a circle. It's only saying, only speaking appreciation. Blows your mind. In some way you get crazy because you want to move, you want to get out. But on the other hand, it's so incredibly beautiful that we were all really afraid to receive the appreciation. Like, imagine the people that know you the best in the world spend 5 minutes talking about why they love you so much. Crazy, crazy experience.
That sounds like an experience that happens at Not Back to School Camp, the summer camp for teenage unschoolers where I work. And it happens in the context of a group of about 10 campers plus one staffer like myself. And it's after we've known each other for only 1 week or 2 weeks, but we do an appreciation circle where each person gets positive appreciation for maybe 3 or 4 minutes each. And it's an incredibly powerful experience. And so I can only imagine what it's like being part of a group of approximately 10 people for a year and working intensively with them, 8 hours a day. Mm. This leads into, I think, the eternal question that you've told me for Nomads, which is, what is Nomads? And I've visited Nomads Amsterdam back in early 2014, which is where I met you. And I got to spend a few weeks hanging around the area because Nomads Amsterdam has a co-working space attached to the space where the tribe members work. And so I had this impression that Nomads was roughly one-third entrepreneurship training program, because you did have these assignments like the picnic example, where you're actually working with other businesses and you're creating stuff and you're getting paid for it. And then it seemed like it was one big part self-discovery camp, in that there was a lot of self-reflection and self-knowledge, and that was a big focus of the whole program. But it wasn't assuming that you know who you are, but you were figuring out who you are throughout the year. And then the last third seemed to be like a big group, like, adventure program. I know that there's a wilderness retreat aspect to the Nomads program, and I was there when one of the tribes went away for this wilderness retreat, which I hope you'll tell me a little bit more about. But is that impression correct that it's like part entrepreneurship program, part self-discovery, and part adventure?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good description. Yeah, there's definitely the part of entrepreneurship, and the part of entrepreneurship does not necessarily have to be about business. It doesn't mean you have to start a business, you have to run a startup or something. It's more about taking initiative. So it's more about being entrepreneurial than being an entrepreneur. So if, like in my case, starting a school is not exactly starting a business, but it's about taking initiative. Or if someone feels very strongly about an environmental situation or about a social thing, it's about taking initiative. Or in Nomads a lot, like the entrepreneurial stuff in Nomads also comes in because Nomads per se doesn't have a structure. It doesn't have rules. One of the things I tend to say about Nomads is in the 5 years of its existence, there hasn't been a decision taken on how we take decisions. So as a group, as a community, as all the students that are there, there's no central body that can take decisions. So everything depends on whether or not you do it. So if I believe that there should be more plants in the building, which was my big thing in the year, I believe there should be more plants in the building. And for 2 months, I've been complaining that the place looked so great. And then eventually I figured out that if I want more plants to be there, I have to put more plants into the building. So Nomads is entrepreneurial also in the sense that you won't be, people won't do stuff for you. You don't have your mom being there doing what you want, in to say it in some way. You have to take action. So it's entrepreneurial in the business sense if you want to. It's entrepreneurial in the sense of you can take initiative in the world. But it's also entrepreneurial in the sense that you have to take action, else you won't learn anything at Nomads.
What happens when all the plants that you brought in start to die and decay and smell, and you decide you no longer want to deal with the plants because now they're not beautiful, they're just messy? Is there any sort of structure at Nomads to hold people accountable when they're not taking responsibility?
No. and as you can imagine, this is one of the topics that is discussed a lot. Like there was the time when I put plants everywhere in the building and everything was green and everybody was happy about how green it was, and then I went away for a week and I came back and all the plants were dead and I was super mad. And people were very sorry for me, but at some point somebody told me, like, Ivo, we assumed that since you were the one who put all the plants here, you also had a plan for what you do when you are on vacations, and that you told someone to do it, and you didn't. But you also missed to tell someone, you know, to take care of it. So I naturally assumed that the other people will care about the same stuff that I care about, and they don't. And it turns out to be the same way in life in general. I really care deeply about some stuff, and the rest of the world maybe doesn't. So I need to do something.
So Nomads has a culture of telling you to clean up your own mess.
Yeah, and if other people don't clean up the mess, and you are the first one to get annoyed about it, then you have to do something about it.
Tell me about the wilderness retreat. I know there's a name for it that I'm forgetting, but Nature Quest. That I remember that was a very compelling idea when I heard about it. So tell us a little bit about that.
The Nature Quest is something being brought in, I think, since the fourth tribe or something like that. So since the second year, more or less, or the third year, by the guy who founded Chaos Pilots Rotterdam. So the predecessor of Nomads, who after Chaos Pilots asked himself, okay, so I started this school, but what happens now? And he went to the US to learn at a school called the School of Lost Borders. And they do these wilderness retreats called Nature Quest or Vision Quest. And that's a ritual taken or adopted, adapted from many indigenous cultures, and I guess many Native American cultures, where a young person at a certain point has to go out of the community to come back to the community. So you're not a full part of the community until you have left and then decided to come back. So this ritual can take lots of forms. The way that we do it is it's a 10-day process where the whole tribe, they go to a place where in nature. They spend 3 days in preparation. They spend 3 days outside in nature, each one by themselves. During these 3 days, the people fast. They don't eat anything. They only have water with them. They only have a tarp with them, only a plastic, I don't know how you would call it, like a piece of plastic to guard them from the rain and the sun. And they have nothing more with them, only water and the tarp, and spend 3 days outside, 3 days and nights, and have time to meditate and to ask themselves, who was I up until now? What do I identify with? And why? And what's the history of all of this? During the preparation, you get a lot of help in asking yourself these questions. And then you have time to decide, okay, so this is who I was, and this is why I am who I am right now, and who am I going to become? Who do I choose to be? So this is also why it's called the vision quest, is what's the vision of myself, what's the vision of my future self? Who do I want to become and what do I want to do? And it was during this nature quest that we did in Slovenia, in the mountains in Slovenia, that I actually decided that I wanted to start Nomads in Sevilla, or Nomads in Spain. And the good thing is it's such a strong ritual, because you're out there, you're all alone, and you take these big decisions about your life. They have a lot of that. It's very powerful. It's a very powerful way to look at your life and to decide for your life.
First of all, they definitely don't do that at Harvard Business School. And yeah, exactly. Second of all, I love it, because if the focus of entrepreneurship or starting a business is on connecting something that you are passionate about, something you want to change in the world, something you want to contribute to something that is also profitable, then we pay so much attention to the profitable part and so little attention to the connecting with yourself part, the figuring out what your core values and motivations are. And something like this nature quest seems like it seems so obvious once you state that this is part of an entrepreneurial training program, but it is unusual. It's still very foreign. The idea of doing that is so foreign to many people.
Go ahead.
Let's talk about who joins Nomads briefly. Typically, how old is a nomad? And you can talk about Nomads Amsterdam in this case.
Mm-hmm. All the answers about typical are very difficult at Nomads, and they have to be given to get some kind of image, but it can be very different in each case. So in case you're considering to start Nomads, please do not take these typical answers as restrictions or anything. So a typical age would be 20 to 35. We have had people younger than 20 and older than 35, but typically people are somewhere between there. And I think even more to limit it more between 25 and 30, I think is even more typical.
Have you had any minors join? Anyone, like a teenager?
I think the youngest that we had applying was 17, if I'm not mistaken. And the recommendation to him was go out into the world, make some experiences, and then come back next year, which is what he did.
So that we're really looking at the university age and the post-university, maybe the decade plus, post-university typical age.
Yeah.
What's the oldest person who's ever joined Nomads?
Cool. I'm not absolutely sure. I would guess somewhere around 36, 37, not much older.
And where do Nomads typically come from? Do they come from many different countries?
Funny enough, majority Germans. I don't know why.
Huh.
It's always about half of the tribes are Germans. And Germany is the neighboring country to the Netherlands, so there's something there. Of course, many Dutch people, because it's in the Netherlands. And then kind of everything from there is possible. Yeah, so people come from many different places. And of course, the majority is European, because it's much easier for the visa. But apart from that, we have had people from almost everywhere. So a few Asians, Korean, Chinese, one Mongolian, a few South Americans, a few Northern Americans. Very few Africans. We have had nobody Muslim up until now, for example. We have now had the first Spanish person. We have had no French people. It's strange that some countries are more present than others. But I would say the majority is German, Dutch, then European, then the rest of the world.
And I'm sure this question has a variety of answers also, but what does it cost to go to Nomads?
Well, no, this is the one that has kind of a clear answer. 6,000 euro for 1 year.
6,000 euros. That is a bargain. Plus, you pay your own living expenses.
Yeah. Got it. Which in Amsterdam is quite a bit.
And what happens to Nomads alumni? Where do they typically go if there is a typical destination? Certain fields, certain careers, or do they just scatter into the wind and go every direction?
Yeah, I think more like every direction. Let's see what I can find. I would say many start their own business or their own thing, whatever it is. There's quite a few successful Nomads businesses running. Many of them, some of them stay in Amsterdam. Many of them go back to their country or go on to another country. A few go to university, which I also think is interesting. Figure out, okay, now I did Nomads, now I know what I'm interested in, and now I'm going for this. And there are a few Nomads in big companies. The usual thing that people ask about Nomads is, okay, one of the things we haven't mentioned, Nomad doesn't have a diploma, as it's not an accredited university, and we also don't give we don't want to give a diploma. There's an ongoing joke. When I started Nomads, I asked Peter, the founder of Nomads Amsterdam, what kind of diploma his school is going to give me, and he said, no, you're not going to get a diploma, but you can get a tattoo in the end if you want to.
And did you?
So, yeah, at our graduation party, we had a tattoo artist, so everybody that wanted to could have a tattoo.
Wow.
So instead of a graduation, you take your graduation with you, your diploma. So people go kind of going in all directions. There's many people in education, of course, because Nomads is such a new education that people they meet a lot of new educators.
What's been challenging for you about starting this new program in Spain?
Kind of this difficulty in explaining what it is. If I could come to Spain and say, okay, so I'm building this school that has this program, you get these these workshops, or you get training in this. In the end, you get a diploma that serves you this. And in the end, you get these jobs. That would be fun. No, they actually wouldn't be fun, but it would be nice for a change. What I have is okay, so I have a program that in Amsterdam looks like this, while it's difficult to say how exactly it looks because it looks different for every person who goes there. And here in Spain, again, it might look different completely. That's what I'm trying to build. People look at me like, hey, what? Additional to that, in Spain, you have people have been told for a long time that it's very, very important for young people to get diplomas, to get titles. So it's, you go to university, you get a bachelor's degree, then you get a master's degree, then you get another master's degree, and maybe another one. And people are told that this is really important. So I'm telling them, I'm building up a school that has no diploma. They look at me like, what? Why? So the fact that it breaks with so many paradigms, in one way makes it really difficult, and on the other hand makes it really easy because people are way more interested in, like, they ask the question of what, why, or what are you doing? And they become curious. If it was just another university program, it would be like, well, okay, you're making a university program.
I remember after I visited Amsterdam last year, I went to Spain to visit a summer camp friend for a week, and she's in college right now. And when I was explaining some of my ideas to her, it really took her aback. And she said, we don't do anything like that here in Spain. That, you know, I can imagine you're facing the same difficulties somebody would if they tried to open a Sudbury style free school in really bucking the norms. Even in Amsterdam, it was, you know, there was resistance to those sorts of ideas, and homeschooling and unschooling, I remember, had just started to crack into the popular culture there. And Amsterdam being such a forward thinking place. I can imagine Spain is difficult for you.
Yeah. And in Spain, you have an additional difficulty. The Spain has been in a dictatorship for a long time, and until relatively recently, until like 30 years ago. So a very conservative right-wing, that's what it was in for a long time. So, and it was very isolated from the rest of the world. So this thing that your friend said about, we don't do anything like this here in Spain, is something that is very typical for people to say. It's like, well, here in Spain, we don't do that kind of stuff, you know? All that innovative new stuff that you have in the north of Europe, or in the US maybe, here in Spain, we don't do that. So, and again, on one side, that is really positive for me, and on one side, that makes it difficult, because people are not used to it, so they don't look for it. But on the other hand, there is a young generation of people who say, fuck, sorry, nowhere, like, I can't find anything new in this country. Like, all the innovative, super cool stuff, I have to go to Northern Europe. I can't find anything like this in my country. So if I tell them, hey, there is something like this in your country, they're like, oh, this is interesting.
Last question, Ivo. Outside of nomads, what is the most powerful education experience you've ever had?
I think, I don't know if it counts exactly as outside of nomads, because it was during my time at nomads. But at some point, we have a format at nomads called the what the fuck lectures. So instead of lectures, you have what the fuck lectures, where somebody comes in. And the main goal, Blake, you held one, I remember. The main goal is for at least half the people to walk out with a different view on the world or on the thing that was being presented than they had before. And we had a what the fuck lecture of two guys, a Palestinian and an Israeli, who run an organization that brings together Israelis and Palestinians and internationals to have conversations. And since my father is from Israel, I thought that I knew a bit about this whole conflict. And in my eyes, Israelis and Palestinians don't talk. That's what I knew. I, as far as I was aware, they fight each other. So they had their lecture, and afterwards I walked to them and was like, how is this possible? They said, well, we have one meeting coming up in a month if you want to come. So me and a couple of other people from my tribe, we flew to Palestine and participated there. And that was a crazy, crazy, crazy experience for me to see the first of all, the meeting was held, it was a weekend, 3 days. The meeting was held in Arab, in Hebrew, and in English, so everything was translated, doubled. And there were people who saw the other people in the circle as enemies, and still they had come to talk. So basically they had grown up with that image of the one on the other side of the border as the enemy that you have to kill. And then there was the offer of having this conversation space, and they came to talk, even though they hated the other one. And there were beautiful moments, there were disturbing moments, there were all kinds of very, very impressive situations where enemies had a conversation. And me being European, not having grown up in war, not knowing war, being able to witness that was incredibly touching, incredibly, yeah, impressive.
My guest today has been Ivo Degen. Thank you, Ivo, for being on the show.
Thank you, Blake.
This is the Real Education Podcast. This show is produced with the assistance of Zen Zenith, who also created the music. For more episodes, visit blakebowles.com/podcast. Thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you again soon.